Peer, this is the multi-persona queue and a prep for your IP8999 executive presentation to Plurilock. Recorded July 9th, 2026. The presentation is Thursday, July 23rd, so you have about 2 weeks. The purpose of this episode is not to hand you finished answers. It is to have you sit with the questions the four Plurilock executives in the room are most likely to ask you. Hear a first draft of the answer, and note where an answer feels thin, where you need to shore up evidence, and where you want to huddle with Dewey or Martin or Jason before the live session. Listen the whole way through once. Then, when a question lands as a real risk, mark it, come back, and either strengthen the evidence or reshape the answer with the team. The rehearsal read gave you the 25-minute prepared talk. This one gives you the 30 minutes that come after it, which faculty told you is where most of the value of the session actually lives. Before we get into the questions themselves, let me walk you through who is asking them. There are four external Plurilock voices at the table. Jason is with you on the team, so he does not count as audience. That leaves Manuel Vyar, Dave Glenn, Veera Singh, and Ian Patterson. Manuel Vyar is Managing Director of Critical Services and the Corporate CISO. He owns the operations and delivery vertical. 25-plus years running security operations centers, Raytheon veteran, Blunt Operators Register. He opened his first interview by asking whether you wanted the answers the way it's supposed to be or the way we're actually operating. Expect that same directness in the room. He will not pretend the gaps he's already named do not exist. He will push back specifically when the diagnosis maps onto a discipline he actually built. Dave Glenn is SVP Sales. Joined October 2025, so at presentation time he is 9 months in. He is rebuilding sales playbooks, standing up the Focus 5 partner strategy, and running the strategic account manager motion. Talkative, story-driven, reaches for car and food analogies. He believes in the process. He also runs entirely in direction of travel language, which the rubric explicitly does not credit. That tension is the biggest single risk in the exchange with him. Veera Singh is Chief Financial Officer, with HR administratively under her. She owns the 13-week cash runway, the live flow and FA thumb dashboards, the monthly management package, and the semi-annual budget cycle. Measured, self-aware, uses the word systematic back at you because she picked it up from Martin. She will ask about documentation and process specifics. She defers to Ian on strategy and to Manuel on operations. E and Patterson is CEO. Analytical, articulate, comfortable naming trade-offs. He is unusually willing to argue his own systems down. He explicitly asked in June what mechanism you would recommend to close the mission vision values last mile gap. He deliberately does not have a strategy officer, a PMO, or an ERP, and each of those is a conscious opportunity cost call. Expect him to push on whether the references you cite are actually size matched to a 70-person contractor-heavy firm, or whether they are KOHSO-shaped answers scaled down. That is the room. Now the questions. We will move through them in the flow of the presentation itself. Category 1 first, then 2 through 6, then path forward. Category 1, customers and products. The first question will almost certainly come from Dave. He will say something like, "You told the room segment choices depend on the individual sellers. I concede the artifact is not in a binder yet, but Garrett, Butio, Hma, and I are literally coding differing requirements into HubSpot. Five Eyes gets one intake pattern, financial services gets a different one, healthcare a business associate agreement, and PHI handling." When Mora Cortese talks about a four-activity segmentation process, what specifically am I missing beyond what we are already doing? The answer, from you, is two pieces. First, the qualification work Dave and Garrett are building is real, and the deck notes the direction of travel. What earns approach credit under the rubric is what exists and runs today, not what is being built. Second, the specific piece the Mora Cortese frame lays out that is not yet in place is the pre-segmentation activity, where segmentation criteria get defined by differing requirements before customers get assigned, and the evaluation activity, where the segment scheme gets systematically reassessed on a cadence. HubSpot tags today are effectively an implementation layer with rep-level judgment upstream. The four-activity model is the shape of the whole loop. Say that gently. Dave will not politely swallow the rubric position, so lead with the credit and land the rubric position after. Dave will follow with the more philosophical version. He will say, I have been at Plurilock 9 months. Everything I own is a rebuild. Are you asking me to pause and rescope against MORA-CORTEZ or keep going and document as I go? The answer is keep going. The rubric position is not a critique of the work in flight. It is a discipline that stops the assessment from crediting intent as capability. The design resources are there to shape what to build next inside the rebuild you are already running. If Dave hears that, the tension goes out of the exchange. Category 2, operations and production. Dave and Mann, well, will co-own the 2.2 question on partner selection. Dave will say the Focus 5 is not picked because a rep sponsored them. They are picked against 5 criteria he can rattle off in his sleep. Technical fit, strategic alignment, quality of relationship, services friendliness, long-term positioning. Vendor neutrality underneath. Mann, well, will echo it. So the question is the OFI that we do not have a formal selection process, or that the process I described is not documented in a way somebody other than me could run? That answer belongs to Dewey. It is the second one. Mon Chukka and colleagues surface roughly 7 predictors of alliance success, and among them is the existence of a formal, teachable selection process, alongside trust and information quality and joint problem solving. Today, the 5 criterion lens lives with the SVP sales seat. The approach question is whether the criteria are defined and repeatable in a way the firm carries through role changes, not whether the criteria themselves are wrong. That framing gives Dave the credit and lands the finding. Mann, well, will then take the 2.3 question on in-process measurement. He will say the only in-process signal today is on-time delivery. He has been building KPIs specifically to make the case for a ticketing platform. When you cite any Ely, pick 2 or 3 in-process measures the paper would tell him actually earn their keep on an engagement Plurilock size. Dewey answers here as well. NEELE and colleagues define a performance measurement system as the set of metrics that quantify the efficiency and effectiveness of an organization's actions, and they frame in-process measures as measures inside the work process, not only at the outcome. The design resource does not name the specific 3. That is the redesign the firm owns. What it does give is the shape. A leading operational indicator that predicts customer-side outcome. Stellar Solutions runs this at the process level. The KPIs man, well already named, response time and vetting rate sit inside that shape. The last Manuel question in CAT 2 is on the flagship 2.1. He will say, you called it a flagship strength and I will defend it, but from I've got an idea to SOW in front of customer Jason and I can do it in 5 days. That is not because the system is that good. It is because Jason and I have run into just about everything in cyber and we are pattern matching from memory. How much of the discipline survives if Jason and I both walked out tomorrow? Dewey again. The intake questionnaire, the level of effort and work breakdown templates, the SOW template, the phase plan structure, the RACI, the risk register, and the service blueprint all survive independent of who is running the desk. What travels with Mann, well, and Jason is the pattern recognition speed on top of that stack. The flagship claim rests on the artifact layer being repeatable and consistently applied. If a future redesign preserves those 7 components, the discipline holds. The speed is a compounding advantage on top, not a substitute for the system. Category 3, workforce. 2 questions land here, both from Vera with Ian echoing. The first is on 3.1. Vera will say the workforce cost strategy is try before you buy. The target is roughly 80% consult to employee conversion. Neither 3.1 nor 3.2, as you framed them, explicitly deals with a workforce designed to be contractor-heavy at the front and convert at the back. Does Yort's model handle a workforce built like that, or is it built on a headcount plus hire assumption? This one is Martin's. Yort and colleagues propose a strategic workforce planning model for consultancies that connects anticipated demand to the size and composition of the future delivery workforce. The reference does not prescribe an FTE-only workforce. The construct is composition planning against demand, which is precisely what a contractor plus conversion pipeline is. What today is missing is the demand forecast side that lets the fractional see our O signal drive bench sizing ahead of the win. Stellar Solutions illustrates a companion pattern. Planned surge capacity through a standing part-time advisor pool for peak demand. That is the shape of the redesign. The 80-20 conversion logic can sit inside it. Vera will then take 3.2. She will be very direct. We just do not have the HR function anymore. Frank was part-time and he is gone. Recruiting sits with department heads plus agencies plus LinkedIn Recruiter. When your resource points to WILDEN on employer signaling, what does signaling actually mean procedurally when there is no one owning the employer brand? Martin again. WILDEN frames signaling as a way to shape the clarity, credibility, and consistency of what an employer presents to prospective candidates. The framework does not presume a single owner. It presumes a coherent signal. A distributed model can carry a coherent signal if the department heads work from the same articulated position on what Plurilock offers scarce cybersecurity talent. Integrated project management company runs the recruiting through a defined program where required skills are identified at the requisition stage and candidates get evaluated against the firm's culture through a multi-step interview. That is the shape at Plurilock scale. The TI specialist seat Vera is scoping is one route to hold it, not the only route. Category 4, measurement and analysis. Vera will open the 4.2 question. She will say she has live flow feeds, FA thumb across three systems, the management package, and a scorecard build in progress. When you cite AB Ernethy on causal performance maps, is the OFI telling her to add a formal mapping layer on top of the scorecard, or telling her the scorecard itself is not the right substrate? And does the method assume clean automated feeds, or does it work off what managers already know while the data plumbing is imperfect? Dewey answers, a mapping layer on top. AB Ernethy and colleagues describe a method for constructing causal performance maps from the operating knowledge managers already hold. The premise is explicitly that the maps get built from tacit knowledge, not from an ERP clean data feed. So the scorecard is the right substrate, and the method fits Plurilock scale precisely because it is designed to start from what leadership already knows about how workforce affects operations, affects customers, affects financial results. The manual aggregation state does not block it. The first version is a facilitation project, not a systems project. Then Vera will ask about the 4.5 flagship. She will thank you for the strength and then ask if there is a peer-reviewed treasury resource that would recognize what Plurilock is doing at its scale, or if the strength holds on the assessment criteria alone. Dewey again. The strength holds up under all four assessment criteria. Approach through the 13-week cash runway and the weekly IRIP, and the hurdle rates and sensitivity analysis, and the 30-item due diligence checklist. Learning through semi-annual budget revisions and post-acquisition cost reviews feeding future assumptions, alignment with the profitability and cash runway objectives, and the board-approved strategy. Integration through treasury dashboards feeding the monthly management package and audit committee reporting. We did not force a peer-reviewed treasury reference into the strength. Strengths do not require references under the rubric. What is worth preserving in any redesign is the specific composition. The 13-week horizon, the daily plus weekly cadence, and the segregation of duties across the US-Canada IRIP split. Category 5, strategic leadership. This is where Ian is going to spend most of his time. The first question is on 5.5. Ian will say, I have deliberately not deployed an ERP and not stood up a PMO. We watch clients turn those into train wrecks. When you say leadership cannot see schedule, scope, and cost in one place, is the OFI that the II glue is not done yet, or that even when it is done, it will not do what Mess Kendall says a portfolio management system should do? Man, well, will echo it from the operator side. Does the framework give leadership a mechanism to arbitrate when a strategic initiative moves aside because customer delivery has to win this week? This is Martin's, and this is the answer you must land clean. Mess Kendall frames project portfolio management as the discipline that connects strategy to delivery. The construct is portfolio visibility and prioritization, not a specific organizational mechanism. A PMO is one implementation, an II glue architecture that rolls departmental systems of record into a single leadership view is another. The 5.5 diagnosis is that the visibility and the prioritization mechanism are not in place today, whichever route the firm chooses. The Manuel side question is the sharper version of the same construct. The arbitration layer between strategic initiatives and customer delivery is exactly the Connect strategy to delivery piece Meskendall names. Do not lead with Meskendall by name. Lead with the construct, visibility and prioritization. Ian will hear you. Ian will then raise the 5.1 MVV last mile gap. He named it himself in June. He will say, mission and vision are well understood at the board and C-level, but I do not have a feedback mechanism to know if a day one hire, confronted with a decision, actually uses those values as inputs. I asked your team in June what the recommendation would be. What have you got for me now? Martin, 5.1 sits in the appendix. Happy to pull it up. The construct behind the deployment gap is that mission and vision reach the top of the org through repetition, and the values are starting to inform HR decisions, but no defined process today validates that any given business initiative aligns with mission or vision at the operator level. Design resources in this territory include a values-based decision filter embedded into the go-no-go Gates man. Well already runs on the Cat 2 side, and Dave runs on the Cat 1 side, and periodic MVV alignment audits of a sample of operator-level decisions. Note this one carries a verify flag. The deck body OFI list did not include 5.1, so before Thursday, confirm what appendix slide Ian will pull up and what design resource sits there. Ian will then push on the 5.4 flagship. He will thank you for the strength and ask if you actually read the completed acquisitions and the India divestiture and the hardware exit as outputs of a systematic strategic initiative selection system, or as three individually good judgment calls that lined up with the screening factors after the fact. Martin, the rubric asks whether the approach is systematic, defined, repeatable, and consistently applied, not whether every input to a decision is scripted. The 30-item due diligence checklist, plus board-level review, plus growth strategy screening factors, are the systematic approach. The tariff and KO earning realities are inputs the approach handled. What lifts this from individual judgment to systematic approach under the four criteria is that the same design was used on the India divestiture, the hardware exit, and the completed acquisitions we could see. If a fourth decision used a materially different process, the diagnosis would need revisiting. Category 6, governance. Ian will open on 6.4. He will say, the informal process made two of the biggest calls of the last 18 months. The India divestiture and the hardware exit, both board visible through the audit committee. Is the 6.4 finding that the informal process will not scale or that it does not work today? Martin, will not scale, plus one present state limitation. The approach criterion asks whether the risk identification, weighing, and escalation process is defined and repeatable enough that the board sees a consistent picture rather than what the current escalation happens to surface. Today, the risk registry and the out-of-sequence audit committee escalation both exist, and the two decisions Ian named show the informal process working. The present state limitation is that the escalation trigger is management judgment rather than a defined threshold, meaning risks that fall below one exec's radar are less likely to reach the board. The scaling concern is a compounding version of the same construct. Ian will follow with the resource fit test, and Man, well, will echo it. Convince me Gio Arden, Loeb, and Soong is size matched to a 70F TE firm and not KOHSO-shaped. Manuel's version, I do not want to build a KOHSO-shaped monster on a 70F TE company. Martin again, Gio Arden, Loeb, and Soong explicitly propose a contingency framework. The ERM design varies with firm size and complexity rather than prescribing a single organizational structure. At Plurilock scale, that means the design elements are a defined risk identification cadence, a defined escalation threshold, and a defined board-facing view. Not necessarily a full-time risk officer or a KOHSO stack. Integrated Project Management Company illustrates a services firm that embeds risk assessment inside its planning process and escalates significant risks for executive review. The 6.4 design intent is that shape at Plurilock scale, not a scaled-down version of Fortune. ERM. Ian will then take the 6.5 ESG question. He will say, no ESG process, no ESG report, by design. I said it would be unusual for our industry and scale. We do have S practices with teeth. Vacation usage monitoring, diversity of thought hiring check, shuttered offices as an implicit environmental effect. Is the OFI that we should be producing an ESG report and setting formal goals, in which case I will politely disagree, or that the deliberate S practices are not integrated into a scorecard? Martin, the narrower reading. The 6.5 OFI question is not whether Plurilock produces an ESG report. It is whether the firm's strategies, systems, and scorecard address economic, social, and environmental sustainability at the design level. The vacation usage discipline and the hiring diversity check are real S practices. Today, they are not visible in the leadership scorecard or the audit committee reporting. Making the S practices scorecard visible is the design opportunity. HubBard offers a resource on how organizations measure sustainability performance without overbuilding the reporting apparatus. Note the second verify flag on this one. HubBard's page reference varies between the 18 and 19 volume listings. Team reference audit already flags it. Path forward. Three questions here, and the first belongs to Ian. He will say, across all 30 of the OFIs, every place I have deliberately chosen to operate without formal process is a conscious trade-off. If you had to name the one place where the opportunity cost of not building the mechanism is higher than the opportunity cost of building it, what would it be and why? Not diplomatic. This one is yours to answer, Peer. 3.1, workforce capability and capacity. It is the highest benefit item on the matrix, and the one where the delivery-heavy critical services shift Ian has explicitly chosen at the strategic level creates a direct dependency. The two calls in the Just Do It quadrant, 4.2 causal map analysis and 2.2 partner selection, are lower cost and pay for themselves quickly. The genuine trade-off pressure is 3.1. Without demand forecast composition planning matched to that strategic shift, the utilization firefight man, well is running becomes the ceiling on the strategy. The Yort design resource fits at Plurilock scale, and the fractional CRO experiment Vera has in motion is the right seed. Man, well will then raise sequencing and dependencies, and Vera and Ian will echo it. Manuel's version, I would argue 6.4 depends on 4.2 being built first, because the causal map layer is what turns a risk registry into an oversight system. Vera's version, if I invest in 3.1 while 3.5 is already producing signals leadership acts on, is there a sequencing risk that I have to rebuild 3.5 6 months later? Ian's version, is 4.2 really a Just Do It, or is it dependent on scorecard maturity first? You lead the answer with Dewey and Martin backing up. Two live dependencies, and both are worth naming inside the plan. 6.4 does benefit from 4.2 being underway. The causal map layer sharpens what escalates to the audit committee. That is why 6.4 is positioned in parallel from day one rather than sequential first. The dependency is real, but the ERM design elements can be scoped without waiting for the full 4.2 build. On 3.1 versus 3.5, the flagship measurement system is meant to be preserved. 3.1 adds the demand forecast composition layer upstream. The redesign risk is manageable because the 70-30 individual scorecard weighting and the HR dashboard are not dependent on how capacity is planned. On 4.2 as Just Do It, AB Ernethy's method builds from tacit managerial knowledge rather than a mature data feed, which is why it lands in the low-cost quadrant. The scoring is a plotting tool, not a priority ranking. Man, well, we'll close with the blunt one. How confident are you in the cost and benefit numbers? 4.2 at cost 1.5. Building a causal map that Vera, Dewey, and Man, well, would all trust is not a low-cost exercise. If I told the room 4.2 is more like 2.0 or 2.5, does that move it out of Just Do It? Your answer, and it is the honest one, not very confident on absolute values, reasonably confident on relative ordering. The scoring is a plotting tool to make the shape of the choice visible, not a priority ranking. If 4.2 moves from 1.5 to 2.0 or 2.5, it slides toward the diagonal but stays high benefit relative to cost. The quadrant call holds. The point of the matrix is which quadrant an opportunity lands in, not the specific coordinate. Where the coordinate matters is at the extremes. 3.1 at cost 2.7 and benefit 3.0 is genuinely the highest benefit most demanding item, and 2.2 at cost 1.5 is genuinely the lowest cost highest benefit item. Everything in the middle deserves the humility the numbers imply. That is the 17. Before we close, Pierre, 7 things to huddle with the team on before Thursday. 1. The NEELE quote pinpoint on page 1229. Confirm the efficiency and effectiveness phrasing sits on that page and not on a nearby one. 2. The 5.1 MVV last mile design resource. The deck body did not carry 5.1. Confirm what appendix slide Ian will pull up and what design resource sits there. 3. The Hubbard 9 volume and year discrepancy. Align on which citation format the team will use if Ian pushes. 4. Direction of travel discipline with Dave. Rehearse questions 1 and 2 so the rubric position lands after an explicit credit of work in flight beat. Dave will hear otherwise as dismissal. 5. No PMO discipline with Ian. Rehearse the 5.5 answer to lead with the construct is visibility, not the resource name. Do not lead with Mess Kendall. 6. ROR 1 entity, East and West divisions, and Integra separate. Slide 9 already reads that way after the roleplay fix. Confirm it stayed clean through the build. 7. The Manuel 4.2 cross-touch, where his in-process measurement work is the upstream input to Vera's causal map. This is Manuel's own graceful move to make her 4.2 OFI feel joint, not solo. Dewey should coordinate with Manuel on framing the answer if it comes up in Q and A rather than in the retained set. That is the prep. Listen to it once whole. Then, before Thursday, run the 7 huddle items with the team, and you will walk in with the room ahead of you. Good luck.